When you wake up in the morning, what is it that you think you need during your day? Do you think of food? Do you think of money? Do you think maybe of, I just wish I would be understood? Do you think you wake up in the morning, I need to come to my work, I'm already late? What is it when you wake up that you think you need? I know it's a difficult question, because right now you are awake or something like that. And to go a little bit further, what is it in your life that you think you still need? Is it money? Is it recognition? Is it finally a good movie? Is it a relationship? What is it that you feel you need? Do you sometimes think at all that you need still something, or do you feel you have everything? Or are you like most of us who have given up to think about what they need? They just feel, well, my life is the way it is. It will remain the way it is. For now, I just do the best in the given situation. I feel many people have given up thinking about not yet fulfilled needs, maybe due to the frustration that they know already, anyways, I won't get what I need or what I want. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come into this world to wake us up to a need which most of us are not thinking about. The need, however, is more important than the need for air, the need for relationships. It's a need which is buried deep down in our subconsciousness, covered with layers and layers of things which we have to do. Mahaprabhu said that we need God. And he gave an analogy to express just how big that need is. He said, I'm like a person who has fallen into a dangerous ocean, some Asiatic oceans where there are sharks and crocodiles and whatever. I have fallen into the ocean of birth and death, material life. And he said, I appeal now to you, O King of the Kingdom of Love. He used the word Nandanandana. It's the name of Krishna, which expresses that the Lord has a very affectionate relationship to Nanda. O King of that kingdom, I have fallen away from this kingdom of love and come into this ocean of samsara, of material life. But really, I belong to you. He gave an analogy. Like a pollen of dust belongs to the lotus flower, it is attached there. In the same way, I really belong to the lotus flower of your feet. That is a very spiritual way of expressing of expressing God. You know? I belong to you like a little thing of dust. Flower dust belongs to the flower. And please now invest in my case. See that I'm here in this ocean of birth and death, and I'm drowning. Kindly pick me up, bring me to the safe shelter of your lotus feet once again. The disciples of or followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu have talked in other analogies about this need of the soul to be again connected with the Lord. They have given the analogy of a little bird, it's called a Chataka bird, who drinks water but only directly from the cloud. He's not satisfied, not even able to drink the water which has fallen and is now assembling in pools of water, in ponds, in oceans, and so on. Now, this bird can supply its need for drink only from the water of a black, dark monsoon cloud. And monsoon is a seasonal thing. It only happens in July, August in India. So this bird, in order to drink, has to wait for an entire year before that cloud which carries the water which he can drink and survive on comes. And you can imagine this little bird is waiting for a whole year. It has survived the hot summer. And finally, the bird is so thirsty that it almost dies out of thirst. It has an existential need to drink the water now. Then the monsoon comes, bringing these dark rain clouds. The bird feels so joyful and screams out, Jaldi! Jaldi! That's how they make their sound. It means Jaldi. Jaldi means give me water. And it flies joyfully to the cloud and drinks. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, you have a need. You want what is not available here on this earth. Just like the monsoon, it's a cloud, it's above the ground, it's not on the ground. You want the Lord and his special Shakti, the Kripa Shakti, his energy where he dispenses or gives mercy. And it's an existential need which you have. But most of the time we are not aware of this need. We are most of the time satisfied with substitutes, Ersatzbefriedigung, and remain frustrated. A few years ago, I wanted to express this with a poem, and although I'm not a good poet, I do think that the point is good. I don't even remember the lines right now. The poem is called "Don't Trust Me, My Lord." It says, "When I cry, and someone would ask me, 'Why do you cry?' I want you to know that I'm only crying for you. But I would give my tears other names. I cry because of a bad thing which happened to me. I cry because I'm diseased. I cry because I'm so disappointed I could hang myself up on the next tree. I cry because of a broken relationship to my best friend. I give my tears other names. But if you look deep inside my heart, in order to find out what it is that I need, you would find your own beautiful face on the bottom of my heart. Therefore, I have to ask you, don't trust me. When I ask for one thing, I really mean another thing. When I express that my need is for money and for success, really on the bottom of all of this, when I go very deep, I have to admit, I suffer from one broken relationship, a relationship with you, my Lord." So Mahaprabhu addressed this. He went right to the heart of the matter, to the heart of the matter of the discontent, Unzufriedenheit. And he presented something which you could call in contemporary language the end station of all longing, or die Endstation aller Sehnsucht. He presented a way to the Lord, whom he called by many names, Govinda, Krishna, Nanda, Nandana. He said, "This one thing is the need of the soul, and the soul will be satisfied only when it is in that relationship." And he himself is called an acharya. Acharya means he is a teacher, but not by words. He's a teacher by his life example. The example he gives with his life is that of longing, but not for the surrogates, the Ersatzbefriedigung, the things which we put in place of God. But his life is the life of longing for the real thing, for his relationship with Lord. And his tears are not false tears. They are real tears. It is described, and I want to speak about this today, that his particular mood heißt so viel wie innere Haltung, in which he conducted his spiritual life, was that of a deep longing for Krishna. And his role model, the one who taught him to dance in the ecstatic school of love, was no one else than Krishna's direct counterpart Srimati Radharani. Maybe you know, when Krishna grew up, or when Krishna appeared, he came quickly to Vrindavan, where he was engaged in very deep, wonderful, loving relationships with all the residents of Vrindavan, everyone who was there. Not only the cowherd men, the cowherd woman, and their sons and daughters. No, Krishna is celebrated as the god of love. He was together, you know, he was the center of attention of the birds, of the bees, of the elephants, of even, it's described, a wild tiger. Everyone, the humans and the non-humans, would love Krishna so much that they were extremely attached to him. When Krishna played his flute, it was not just nice music, but it's described that the love of his heart for all creation was put into his breath, and from his lips that love went into the flute, so that what came out of the flute was really love, and only love. And the love of his heart also went down to his lotus feet and informed or transformed the ground of Vrindavan, so that the dust of Vrindavan carried his tremendous amount of love. Devotees go to, even on this day, they like to go to Vrindavan. And do you know what they, how they take their bath? They take a dust bath. They take also other baths, because after all we have this body which makes certain smells. But they consider taking that dust and putting it on the head as something which is makes their life successful, because their own Lord, the Lord of Love, went through Vrindavan and distributed his love in two ways, through his flute and with his lotus feet, which touched the dust through the dust. I want to recommend to you, this is something which is difficult to understand, I do know, but we have today two very wonderful devotees with us, Mr. and Mrs. Agrawal, who go to Vrindavan, and on their feet they walk for 40 days through Vrindavan. They are very cultured people, very learned, but for 40 days they just walk, and they cook on a simple fire, on a gas cooker, and they just love to be in Vrindavan. They sleep on the ground. Very educated people sleep on the ground, because they have experienced that walking through the land which is touched by Krishna's lotus feet gives love in one's own heart. This is something you have to experience in order to believe it. It's the magnetic force, the spiritual force. So Krishna was so much loved by the residents of Vrindavan, but at one stage he left Vrindavan to go to Mathura. He went by chariot. It was a horse-drawn chariot with four strong horses. They took him out, and I've made notes here what this does. The residents of Vrindavan, who saw that Krishna was about, kurz davor, to leave Vrindavan, were so heart-stricken, because they thought their life was leaving their bodies. Krishna was their life. So they cried, some threw themselves before the horses and the chariot in order to stop the chariots. But there was a very good chariot driver who knew how to maneuver around. And then, just briefly before Krishna left Vrindavan, he turned around on his chariot and he said, "My dear, beloved people and animals of Vrindavan, you know how I love you. But somehow you must pass now through these most distressful days and nights. But no, I will return. In the future, there will be our happy reunion." There was one witness there, Purnamasi, and she said how this departure of Krishna and his departing words were taken by the Brijvasis. She said, "Ordinarily, Mother Earth tolerates everything. You know how Mother Earth tolerates even wars. She tolerates politicians who are not really capable and doesn't swallow them up." But she said, "Ordinarily, Mother Earth tolerates everything. But still, she is now splitting and cracking from the wheels of that chariot which takes Krishna away. Even she cannot bear the pain of being separated from Krishna." So in less poetic words, when Krishna left Vrindavan, his parents stopped cooking for themselves. The kitchen was covered with cobwebs, and there was a channel of tears which they had cried, which flew from their house to the Yamuna. The cows stood in Vrindavan, they all were just having that mouthful of grass with which Krishna fed them before he left Vrindavan. They didn't want to swallow it. They just kept it. And the cowherd boys were lying in a valley. They had fainted from the pangs of separation from Krishna. And in this way there are descriptions and so on. So the one who was most affected by the pain of separation from Krishna was Srimati Radharani. You know, we say Radha and Krishna, Sita and Rama. She's the energy of God, the counterpart, the always next to him. In fact, in our understanding of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, God must be both male and female. He must encompass everything in one. So she was most affected. She said, I cannot bear the suffering of the fever of separation from Krishna. It is not possible. This fever is as hot as the gold which a goldsmith takes and melts in a pot of clay. I don't know. You must have asked yourself, how is it that in India there are so many golden decorations? Even 3,000 years ago they were made. How did they do this without having any oven from Krupp und Stahl from the Ruhrpott, you know? The answer is, the goldsmith would put the gold into clay pots, and these clay pots they would put into fire, and they would burn a long time, these fires, and then the gold would melt, and then it was possible to make ornaments like bangles and rings, etc. So Radharani says, my fever, which I bear inside, is the same temperature as that molten gold, and I cannot bear any longer the fever of being separated from Krishna. But then she was lying there, and her companions took the petals from lotus flowers, which are considered to be very, very cool, and they sprinkled the petals with nice drops of water, and they put Radharani there to rest there. And within seconds, the temperature which she had burned these lotus leaves. So once Radharani was lying there, and she saw a crow and a kriya passing over her head, and she said, she began in the fever of love, addressed the crow. She said, "Crow, I think you are going to Mathura, where Krishna is. Stay for 1 minute. I need you to bring a message to Krishna. My message is just a question, and my beloved will understand from the question what he has to do. Ask Krishna, who is the king of Mathura now, one question, this question only. When a house is on fire and the animals in the fire in the house burn to death, what is the duty of the master of the house? Isn't it that he is supposed to unbolt the door, the door? Muss nicht den Riegel aus der Tür nehmen, der die Tür verriegelt? So, ask this question. What Radharani wanted to, the crow actually went to Mathura, and remember, this is the spiritual world, it's not so limited like Frankfurt and Berlin. The crow said to Krishna, there's a question from Radharani for you. When the house is on fire and the animals in the house die, what is the duty of the master? Isn't it to unbolt the door? Krishna began to cry. First he trembled, and then he said, I can't do this. What Radharani asked is, my life force is like a living creature, an animal like a cow, in the house of my body. But my body is now full of flames and full of fire. But my life cannot leave because the door is locked. The door is locked by one word from you, Krishna. The word is, you said, I will return. And this promise keeps me from giving up this useless life. Because I knew, no, if you come back to Vrindavan, you see me dead, you will suffer so much, and I don't want this. You can make me suffer, but I will not make you suffer. So you have to tell me that you never return to Vrindavan. Then you take the board out, the lock door is open, and then my life can leave me like a cow which lives in the same house, in the farmer house. It can leave me. But you must unlock the door. So this is the mood of Radharani. Finally, and I will now come to the end of this part, she said something which is really beautiful. Apurva is colored black, like Krishna, and is therefore very dear to me. Put me down on the bank. Put me underneath a Kali Kadamba tree. These two river and tree are my best friends now, where my life comes to an end. Take some mud of the Jamuna River and smear it all over my body and write on it the name of my beloved Krishna. Write down Syam, 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 Syam. And then take the leaves of the sacred Tulasi and put them on these names which you have written all over me. Then all my dear friends, you should sit around me, and as my life is leaving my body, you should all chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I think one cannot go any deeper in as far as describing a need for God's presence. That desire or need which is expressed by Srimati Radharani, I need you, my Lord. Without you, my life can stay maybe 10 more minutes in my body, but then it leaves. And this is that need for Krishna. And it is described that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is no one else than Krishna, who saw his dearest devotee Radharani crying so much for him that he wanted to understand how does she feel exactly. I think we can in some ways understand this thought. Have you also been like me? I sometimes think, if I could only just for one hour watch Sachinandan Swami, I think I would be very disappointed. But if it's just, if I could just watch me, you know, then I would understand me a little better. Is this thought known to you, that you sometimes think, how do people experience me? No, you never think like this. Sometimes some of you think like this. It's an understanding. It's like, it's a curiosity where you want to know something which you can't know as long as you remain yourself. You have to get out of your skin, get out of your box, and become an observer of your life. By the way, in spiritual schools, also the Gaudiya Vaishnavism, we are learning this, to not identify with our ego and our identities, and see everything through the glasses of our ego. No, we very often step out of this role and watch ourselves. There's a meditation which we do. It's called the Buddha Shuddhi meditation. It's really helpful if you can learn this in your life, where you just watch yourself
almost like you would watch a person in a movie acting out his life on the movie, with the exception that now you are watching yourself in the film of your life. And sometimes, my dear devotees, friends, and skeptics, you find a lot about yourself out when you find out a lot about yourself when you just don't identify any longer so much with your faults, with your ego or your adopted identity, and you just watch from outside. It's really helpful. You can ask yourself questions like, is it really like I perceive it? Or do just my mind just create this and it's entirely different? I mean, is it really like this that the person wishes so much bad things for me, or is it just that I'm so insecure that I project this on the other person? Or is the situation really so black? Or is it just that my own anxieties make it like this? So this, I don't know how it's called. Mangala will be able to supply us with the right word. Wie nennt man das? Selbstdistanz? Oder wie ist da ein Wort? Nicht so im Augenblick. This, I read once in a psychological book that this ability to observe yourself, taking a little distance from your life, you know, this is very good. Leonardo da Vinci, a famous painter, said, from time to time, step back from your painting and look at your painting from the distance. With this new perspective, you will see things which you have not seen when you are too close. You will see where your painting needs improvement. So, all wise people, wisdom traditions know this. Mindfulness, it is known as. But taking a distance. So Krishna wanted to take this distance from himself. I'm God, but I would like to see myself like a devotee sees me. I'm interested in this. So therefore, and who is my best devotee? Radharani. She has the most amount of love for me. So let me take the role of another person. I will become my devotee. I will become Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And I will have the same mood, the same attitudes, the same feelings towards me like Radharani. So therefore Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is called inside Krishna, outside Radha. Now he's inside Krishna with everything he is, but outside in the mood he's a golden complexion dancer, a volcano of love that is here. And because he is on a love expedition, he wants to understand how it is to be related to him. And while he is on that expedition, he's very generous, großzügig. He wants to share his discoveries and teach the devotees of this world to be as a devotee. And therefore he comes and he dances. He calls out the names Govinda, Govinda. And when someone says, you are Govinda, you are Krishna, he goes, no, don't say this. And he engages in disseminating or spreading the process through which we in this present age can realize the Supreme Lord. He goes around singing the holy names of Krishna, and with this he distributes this feeling of longing for Krishna. if you want to do sing in the tradition of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you will have to add to your singing this particular mood, that is the longing for the unacknowledged need. Das ist so schwer in Englisch, dass ich das in Deutsch wiederholen möchte. Die Sehnsucht nach der nicht zugegebenen Notwendigkeit. So this is what Lord Chaitanya teaches us, the longing for the hidden need, the need of the soul. And he does this by taking on the role model of Radharani, who longs only for Krishna and nothing and nobody else. That's the particular essence of Chaitanya's movement. If you want to understand what this great avatar had to give, you have to look here. He gives us an understanding of our real need. It is described by Bhaktivinoda Thakur that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu walked through the land of Navadvip early in the morning, he chanted one song. It was a very nice song. I have it here. I will ask our Gaur Krishna to find it, but maybe it will be difficult for a young man. 162. He went through the country, and people were still sleeping. And he had a Sankirtan party, a group of singers, and they made a joyful music. And he would sing one song, Jeev Jago, Jeev Jago, Gora Chandra Bole, Kota Nidra Jao Maya, Pisha Chira Kole. He would say, wake up, sleeping soul, wake up, sleeping souls. This called Sri Gauranga Chandra. How long will you sleep in the lap of the witch of Maya? You can live out a whole lifetime without being awake one time. You can spend a whole lifetime without being awake even for 1 second. That's what he would say. You can live your material life without being awake to the need of the soul. You will feel needy all the time, but you don't know what it is that you need. Money, maybe. Maybe I will be satisfied when I finally make this holiday in Sicily. I heard they have the best pizza down there. And so on. If you... all this new dress from the internet. I mean, this is really how people will look at me. I'm not so special, but then they will think I'm special. And so on. But all these needs which we perceive in us are coming, they are unacknowledged, nicht zugegeben, oder nicht erkannt, sagt man, glaube ich, besser, of a need of the soul. So wake up, he said, sleeping souls, wake up. How long will you sleep in the lap of the witch of Maya? You came into this material world. You said you will worship the Lord, but you have forgotten this, and you remain burdened by ignorance. I have come as an avatar, Hoinu avatar, to deliver you. Who but me is your friend? And I have brought you a medicine that will destroy your sleepiness in the lap of Maya. Take the holy names, I beg you, take the holy names. And in this way, Gauranga Mahaprabhu, he had another song. He would say, know this essential fact of life. Your material life is temporary, and it's filled with various troubles and burdens. And when you have solved one trouble, you think you are happy. When you have taken one burden away from you, you think you are happy. But this is not so. Earnestly take shelter of the Holy Name, and but you can remain engaged in your occupational duties, a teacher or a friseur or so on, it's all right. But recognize the real need. Drink the pure nectar of Krishna Nama, and this will give relief to your heart. This is the message of Gauranga Mahaprabhu. He would speak like this. He would dance like this. And people who would see him, they would not be disturbed. They would not be disturbed in their ego. Why are you calling me? I'm asleep. I'm very much awake. No, they understood. Oh, yes. I'm spiritually still sleeping. Dreaming. And Mahaprabhu said, as you take to the chanting of the holy name, there will be a certain progression which you will see as you move on. And I've written it down. He had one philosopher. I had today two wonderful young men guests in my where I stay. And I brought them to my working room. And they saw my library and they went, wow, so many books about Krishna. Oh, this is nothing. This is only 1/3 of my library. The rest is in Bhagavad Dharma's house. But I also don't have everything. It's so much is there to be known about Krishna. And I pointed them out to one particular shelf in my little library. It was the books of Jiva Goswami, who was one of the main philosophers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. And Jiva Goswami wrote in his Kramadipika commentary a little bit what is happening if you go on this journey of chanting the holy names of Krishna with the feeling of longing. Don't chant just like a music man with nice music and so on. That's already good, but add some longing to it so that it becomes spiritual. I will read this to you. First, a person must hear and chant the holy name to achieve some clarity in his consciousness. So you start to get the dust away from the mirror of your mind. Thereafter, when his heart has become pure, the marrow of the consciousness is clean. It is a fit appearance place for the Lord's beautiful form. In other words, as you chant, and I believe by now many of us are experiencing this, you come into a state, a meditative state, where you see Krishna's form in your heart. It's a very beautiful experience. So, and as soon as the Lord's form thoroughly manifests in his heart, as a result of hearing descriptions of that form, the Bhakta experiences revelations about the Lord's qualities. So, as to put it in simple words, the holy name in the beginning is maybe like this flower when it was a bud and a knospe. We couldn't see the color, we couldn't see the form, we couldn't smell the fragrance. So in the same way, when you start with your chanting, you just only hear some sound. But as you do meditate upon the sound, your mind or consciousness becomes purified or pure, and then you see all of a sudden, whoops, the form. Then you see some qualities like the color or the fragrance. Oh, wow. You feel Krishna is so merciful. He's so kind. He's so sweet. So much loving. And as this process goes on, it's called a process of gradual revelation. You see the pastimes of Lord Krishna. So this is the process which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give us, and it works if you enter his process with the right consciousness. So when you wake up in the morning, which you will do tomorrow, hopefully most of you, ask yourself, what do I need? Is it really that you need to be on time for your work? Is it the big thing because you're late? Or do you need maybe some Freistunden? I heard the teachers nowadays are the poor souls, you know, they have to always work, and just to survive the examination time, they have to work 14 hours a day to correct the examination. I heard from one teacher personally with his own mouth, he told me this, and then I fainted. So is it that you need less hours, you know, on your job? These things are there, they are temporary needs, but the real need is you are a person, a resident of the kingdom of love, and you have fallen into this ocean of birth and death, and the problem is you need to solve these. I will end with a little story. Once there was a man in India who earned his living by pulling a boat full of goodies up the raging Ganga River. He had, man sagt in Deutsch, ein Lastkahn, wo er die Sachen transportiert hat. Das hat er mit Körperkraft den Ganges hochgezogen an einem Seil. So this person was working very hard, so hard that sometimes his feet were bleeding when he stepped on sharp stones. So he prayed to God, God, please, please, I'm very poor. Please save me. I'm pulling this boat up the river. I'm getting very old, very weak. My feet are bleeding. Please come. Please come. I heard that you are answering the prayers of your devotees. So one day, he was just pulling. Krishna stood before him and said, you called for me. Yes, is it you? It's me, can't you see? What do you want? This is the best hour of my life. I have thought very carefully for 40 long years what I would ask you for. Listen very carefully. I want cushions made from the best Benares silk. And they should be placed on the bank of this river so that when I step and pull my boat, I won't bleed. Krishna said, is that all? Would you like to think a little bit more about your regrets? I thought about this for 40 years. I'm very sure that this is all. Aren't we sometimes like this? Saying, I need this, I need that. If the man would say, can you just arrange that I have a decent house with my family and enough land and I will get enough food, then I don't have to pull this foolish boat any longer. But he did. He thought in the same category. But Albert Einstein already said, you can't solve problems on the level on which they appeared. You have to come to a different paradigm, a different understanding of your life. So, Hare Krishna, thank you. So I request you to think about the need, your own need, and then think about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's gift. The gift of love of Godhead, which comes by the chanting of the holy name and which will bring you into the presence of the divine. And when you are there, then all the feet problems and cushion problems, which are there and which are very pressing, I agree, they are taken care of. I hope no one of you is disappointed for me making the same point which I make since 20 years. I'm thinking very much about this in terms of my own life, because I had recently a lot of problems, health problems, internet problems, reputation problems, money problems, and they were very pressing. Very pressing. And I decided, let me try to take shelter. Let me try this. And at the same time, I will, you know, work on the internet problem. I will ask the technician to come, and I will also do everything. But I want to get to the root of things. And that is here. That is here to find. Today is a very good day for all of us. Just the fact that you are here means that you will get powerful blessings. We will end now our program and my lecture. I want to sing with you for only 2.5 minutes. And then I want to request you during this time to turn to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and pray. Chant and add a little spice to it, the longing.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna! Ich wünsche euch ein wundervolles Jahr. Ich weiß, das haben wir schon gesagt, als das neue Jahr anfing. Eine andere Jahreseinteilung ist sicherlich auch Gaur Purnima. Wir fangen morgen das neue Jahr, das Gauranga-Jahr an. Möget ihr ein erfülltes Gauranga-Jahr. Vielleicht ist das sogar eine gute Idee. Die ganze Welt nimmt sich zum Neujahr immer was vor, was Gutes, und dann kommen die Neuwahlen. oder irgendwas Unvorhergesehenes. Oder die eigenen Neujahrsvorsätze straucheln an der eigenen Schwachheit. Und man kann sie nicht umsetzen. So whatever it is, I think why not start a new year tomorrow? It's a better time, it's spring, which gives us more strength. Krishna says of all the seasons, he is the flower bearing spring. So I wish you a wonderful Gauranga year. Hope to see you next year at the same place, same time. Hare Krishna.
Vielen Dank, Maharaj, für diesen wunderbaren Vortrag, und um vielleicht den